welcome to pod 33 of the official Palace pod. I'm Chris Grissom from Palace TV, which you can watch on YouTube, the Palace app, eagles.cpfc.co.uk, and all those tasty social media channels. So another week, another podcast. This time I'm recording these bits in the gym at the training ground, not actually doing some exercise. I've just popped in here because someone's trimming a bush near my building, and you would have just had a buzzing noise in the background. So yeah, I'm in the lovely gym where I do get to work out after work sometimes. But enough of that, talking about my body. Let's talk about the podcast. What have we got on it this week? Obviously, we're going to end with Roy Hodgson's weekly press conference. We've also got a chat with our latest signing from Sevilla. We've got Martin Kelly, who is talking to Premier League Productions. But before all that, he's back for the first time this season, opening the show. Statman, he's just got married and he has requested a brand new jingle. So yeah, basically this is his idea.
Statman. Statman.
Wow, that jingle. That was special. Did you enjoy that?
I've had all summer, really, for that one, haven't I? Just inspired by the Elton John film. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it, no. Yeah.
You've given me free rein for my own jingles now, which is a blessing and a curse. But we don't know how it's come out, do we?
No, not as we sit now. We've just recorded you saying Rocket Man, so let's see what Sean in the edit suite comes up with. Right, how have you been? I haven't seen you as Statman for a while.
No. Well, we both had big summers, haven't we? Both got, married as if
honest men now.
Sound like we married each other. No, we are. We both got married. Had a great time, didn't we? It's been a big summer.
Weddings are lovely, aren't they? Yeah. Everyone looking at you, giving you attention, complimenting your suit.
Yeah, strong suit. I've seen pictures of yours. It did look strong.
I haven't seen pictures of yours. Is it not on social media?
No, I keep that away, mate. Yeah. I'm not allowed to have a profile, am I? But it was immensely, it was unbelievable, mate, isn't it? Unbelievable. And I was in England, in Porto as well, for the England Nations League, where Jesse Lingard's toe was over the line, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, I was in Portugal at the same time for my stag do, but I wasn't in Porto.
You missed out. You missed out.
I was in Albufeira.
Of course. Class.
Really tacky.
Yeah, as tacky as anything. But yeah, what your summer? What did you get up to apart from getting married?
No, I just got married. That's it, yeah. I'm going on honeymoon soon. Day after the Villa game.
Tell me where?
3 days in Tokyo, 9 days in Bali, and about 3 days travelling in between all of that. But yeah, can't wait. I've always wanted to go to Japan. Yeah. Ever been?
No, I've not, but you've not timed it for the Rugby World Cup, have you?
No.
Just before?
Well, yeah, I've timed it so it's not at the time of the Rugby World Cup. Rugby's all right.
It's not that great, is it?
I love cricket, though, to be honest.
Yeah, well, we had a chat before air. Obviously, this is very much a football podcast.
And
we
is this air?
And we chatted about 10 minutes on cricket, which I'm not sure we can do now. But just briefly, I'm still on a euphoric high, not just from my own wedding, but from Ben Stokes' knock. It was freakish. I don't think we can speak highly enough of it. I don't think there's been enough adulation for that man. I think he deserves more credit than he's getting. I think that was one of the best performances I've ever seen in sport. And I'd love to hear people say otherwise, other sports where someone's had an individual performance in sport that's been as great or as significant as that.
And to do it twice in one summer. I mean, the thing is, everyone said once in a lifetime you'll never see it again after the World Cup. Yeah. And we saw it 6 weeks later. So, and now everyone's saying you'll never see an innings like that again. It's like, well, the guy who did it is still alive, still playing cricket. There's every chance he could do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you wouldn't say anything against him now, would you? I think he's capable of anything. But will it turn the series? Think we'll win it now, the Ashes?
I don't know.
No,
I don't know. I think it'll be exciting. I think he'll be on a high. I think hopefully Jofra Archer has scared Steve Smith a bit. We're talking about cricket.
Yeah,
on a football.
I've not got any stats on cricket. Sorry. It's only because I'm short and sweet. And let me deliver, the saddest news over the summer, which has drastically affected my performance here on this show. We've lost the great Dan Blundell.
We have, haven't we? He's not dead, everyone. Not dead, no. He's moved on to another job. Where's he gone?
To a better place, yeah. No, no, he has gone Epsom Racecourse. So good luck to you, Danny boy. But I'm gutted. As you'll soon see, I'm very limited on my stats. So, yeah, that hurt me.
So you've lost your Ray Lewington, haven't you?
I have. Yeah, in fact, I have. Yeah, it's the man behind the scenes you don't often see who's the crucial man. But I've got some. I've got a few. I think Villa, we'll turn our attention straight to it. Villa this Saturday. And I've actually got some positive ones to start with. But let's start with the old negative one, which, if you think it that way, the last time we played them, Villa won in the Premier League. So is that negative? Is that not? It's just a stat, isn't it?
Oh, that was that one in January, wasn't it?
Yeah.
At Villa Park when we had the NBC documentary behind the scenes because we had an amazing start to the season and then they started. They were lovely, lovely production crew, but we didn't win in front of the cameras.
Brought a big curse on us for the rest of the season then.
Yeah, but if you believe curses exist, which I don't.
And I do, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, weird.
let's start then positive ones. And let's start them. It's mainly about Villa being poor. So I really hope this doesn't spice them up and get them going. And
I'm sure they're all listening.
I'm sure Aston Villa are listening in.
Jack. Hey, Jackie boy. Love your socks.
So let's start with Villa's poor record at Palace. So they've won just one in the last 13 games at Palace. So last time they won was 1-0 in December 2014. But the record...
Do you know who scored in that game?
Benteke.
Congratulations.
And I don't know why you all congratulate. It's normally me that asks you the question. Talk me through the goal.
Well, there was a lot of attention on the game because there were rumours that Scott Dan was in line for an England call-up or everyone was calling for that. And then this game, I think the England manager was watching. I guess it would have been Roy, wouldn't it?
It would have been Roy.
And Christian dispossessed him and then ran through and gone, curled it into the far corner, I believe.
He did, yeah, late on. And I wanted from Danny B, but I want to stat on, he obviously scored with his feet. What was the last goal he scored with his feet that wasn't a penalty for Palace?
Was it the one against Liverpool? April 2017, the last time Liverpool lost at home in the league.
I think he scored with his head that game.
Oh, did he?
See, this is the trouble. I should have looked this stat up, really. But I do believe, and this is why I think it's a stunning one, I think it was the one against Southampton at home. Do you remember that one? Fraser Forster sliced it and he tapped it in.
Oh, yeah, I remember
3-0,
that.
3-0, Pardew's last game or one of his last games?
Yeah.
Might have been his last game.
Yeah, up there. One of the last ones. No, I think there might have been another game after that. No, yeah, after that there was Man United, I think. We lost 1-0 at home but played really well.
Bang, gone. Yeah. Well, anyway, let's look up that stat. Sorry, shouldn't have said the one. But anyway, yeah. 2014 was the last loss for us at Selhurst Park against Villa. Villa poor away generally in the Premier League. Their run obviously stretched back to last time they were in the Prem. But they failed to win any of their last 19 away games in the Prem. So drawn just 3 of those and lost 16. So a pretty damn long run there away from home. You never like this stat, but I always give it to you. Do you know what it is?
No.
It's the one about London. Villa poor in London. But you go, oh, that includes Arsenal, Chelsea, Tottenham. Oh,
it's a good point.
Yeah, well, it does, but I'm going to say the stat anyway. Okay. They've lost their last 6 Premier League away games in London, scoring just 3 goals and conceding 16 goals in that time. So, yeah, poor in London. It's nice as well. And let's get positive. If you like your omens, I've got one here. Hodgson absolutely loves playing against Aston Villa. He's won more Premier League games against Aston Villa than he has against any other side. His record against Villa, played 11, won 7, drawn 2, lost 2.
That's a fantastic record.
Pretty sensational. And he's won his first meeting against Aston Villa with each of his previous 4 clubs. So when he was Blackburn manager, Fulham, Liverpool and West Brom, first time he played Villa, beat them. Can he do it with Palace?
Loves it. Loves playing Villa. He must be buzzing.
Yeah, he must be buzzing. And let me just go for the stat that's blown my socks off this week.
Okay. Just checking your socks there. Nice ankles.
Yeah, I know. They're a bit short, aren't they?
So nice tan on them from your mini moon.
Yeah, thank you. Throw that in. But this is the stat. This is the big one, which I think... I looked at it twice, really. I thought, that can't be true. That is too good a stat. And I don't know if you saw this. I don't know if you do your research or your homework. Probably don't, because you're just
busy
swanning around planning your wedding. But since the 2nd of February, where do you think Palace would be in a league table? Premier League table that started on the 2nd of February 2019.
I'm going to guess, I reckon we'd be 5th.
3rd.
3rd?
We would be 3rd if the Premier League started on the 2nd.
Oh yeah, I did see that one. I just can't remember what we were.
Which I just think is sensational. I mean, I just want to read a few out here. It started obviously with the win against Fulham at home. We've got 30 points in 17 games, 9 wins, 3 draws, 5 defeats. It's mind-boggling. That is incredible. So just hopefully we can keep it all going, really.
Anything else?
That's me.
Okay.
That's my stats.
So you've missed some games this season, have you?
You've not had me on, which led me to believe you didn't want me on.
No, I thought you were away.
No, I've been here.
Really?
For,
I thought you were.
On the bench
I
for
messaged
the
you and you said Soz in. Well, no, you might not have said Soz, yeah, in
I
Jersey.
Didn't say Soz, mate. In it's Jersey. Lost all credibility here. This
well, how, when were you in Jersey?
Tax evasion.
No, when?
Oh, right. Why. when? 10 days ago, I got married. Saturday, 17th of August. Performed a little song as well. Which was,
did you?
Yeah, Kaiser Chiefs, Ruby. Married a girl called Ruby. And
I bet she loved that.
Yeah. It didn't sound as great as I thought on the video the next day. But, yeah.
I don't think I did any singing.
You rhyme, though.
I did my rhyme, yeah. I did my thank you poem. Yeah. Thanked everyone. Yeah.
No announcing of the Utilita halftime challenge? Or
no, didn't do that. I did have glad all over, though, at the end of the ceremony as we kissed.
That's Is that true or not?
Yeah, it's true, yeah.
Because I looked up hiring Kayla the Eagle to bring the rings down. Got a quote and everything. Mrs. is not.
She wouldn't have done it.
Not a fan of...
we tried to get her post for a photo shoot before. She wouldn't have done it.
Well, yours was interesting. My wife, not a fan of animals to start with, really. Not a fan of birds. So a live eagle,
yeah.
I think, really would have been pushing the boat out.
It'd be cool if you get it. No, we had our dog as the ring bearer.
And he came down the aisle?
He did, yeah.
Oh, that's sweet. That is sweet. Yeah. I would have liked to do that. But no, it was nothing. I had, in the end, I had a very poor joke from the best man, but I've often thought it should be done. When they say best... They don't say that, but effectively, best man, have you got the rings? And he did the old... patting down of the
classic.
You know, in the pocket. And I was like, and he absolutely did me. And there was a chuckle.
So, classic. You know, very good. Well done. Yeah. My dog didn't think to do that gag.
He did.
It's stupid.
But yeah, thank you. Short and sweet, mate.
Yeah, this was a pleasure.
Yeah.
Let's do it again.
Let's do it again.
Although I'm off, as I said, I'm off on
in
my
Tokyo.
Holidays, so I won't be around the week
so
before the
show the
Spurs
stops,
game.
Doesn't it? That's it. Chris Grierson gone. Crystal Palace Football Club shuts down.
Don't have an understudy.
No understudy, so there'll be no content going up on the website. There'll be nothing happening.
You can do the podcast if you want while I'm away.
I can do the podcast. Okay.
You just have to record a few little links.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. Leave that one with me. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Over to you. Bye. That man there, and apologies for the chat about cricket on a football podcast. Right, up next is a man who has now been at the club for 5 years. It's Mr. Reliable. He's been playing brilliantly the past few months. It's Martin Kelly.
Interesting week for Palace, obviously very up and down. Let's talk about Manchester United first. What did that result mean to you all here at the club, and how did you all celebrate afterwards?
Yeah, I think it was massive for the club. Result there at Old Trafford. Me personally, I've never been there, even with Liverpool, and got a win. So it was great, you know, from listening to the fans after the game and getting the text through off friends and family. It was a moment you can treasure for a club like Palace going up to the Theatre of Dreams and beating them. So it was a nice moment, and you can enjoy it for a short while until, you know, the next game comes.
It was, of course, the first goals of the season. Why do you think Palace has been struggling to get the shots on target, and what made the difference in this game?
I think it was a proper Palace performance away at Man United. We all fought for the shirt, and we took what we trained in the in the week building up, and put it to practice at Old Trafford. It was always going to be a tough game. We knew the pace that Man United have, and we stuck together. We had a game plan, and we got the goals that I think we're creating chances. So we're not scoring them yet, but as long as we're creating them chances, we're optimistic that we'll get goals.
In terms of what made the difference, how do you feel the team is progressing and starting to take shape now?
I think the team, even from pre-season, we've all trained well. We know what we're doing week in, week out here with Roy's tactical sessions, defensively, offensively. We're practicing as hard as we can here, so we're trying to put that into play on a Saturday. We understand that each year the Premier League gets more difficult, and each opponent we come up against, they cause different threats. So we have to look at the game that we've got coming up at the start of the week, focus on that, and then put our practice into play on a Saturday.
And Palace seems to have a really good record away at the moment, especially against the toughest of opposition. What do you think it is about the team that seems to thrive in these kinds of matches against the tougher opponents?
I think we try to do the same with every opponent. It's not always the same when, say, we're at home and we've got more possession. We're still trying to create our chances the same way we do against the bigger sides. I guess they have more of the ball at their home ground, so that could help us on the counter-attack, I suppose. But we try and concentrate on ourselves. We work with the wingers, the forwards, who are all playing well together here, with the midfielders trying to progress in the final third. So it's just about us working week in, week out with Roy and the staff and our offensive stuff, and putting that into play.
And now, of course, level on points with United. In terms of confidence, what does that do for the team going into this weekend?
I think you take every win. You always want to get 3 points in the Premier League. It's always going to be difficult, and we got that against a really tough opponent last week. We understand that we went the week before to Sheffield, who were newly promoted, never got the result we wanted there. So we understand that Premier League will throw results in your face that you don't really want at times. But I think it's a long campaign, and we've got enough experience in the squad to all stick together with the game plan that Roy gives us, and try and all fight for our shirt and get the result each week, no matter what the opponent is.
With regards to Villa, it's almost a new team in a way. So many new players this season at Villa. What are you expecting, and does that make it tougher to prepare for?
I think Aston Villa are a really big club, a lot of history. They've spent a lot of money, like you said, and they're going to come with that newly promoted feel. It's going to be a real difficult game. We know that. We know that Villa are a good side, and like every team in the Premier League, you've got to treat these with respect. So we've got to concentrate on our game plan. We've got to work for each other like we did last week up at Old Trafford, and take our game plan and make sure it works in the game on Saturday.
Is there an extra element of uncertainty, pressure, perhaps, when playing a side that's just come off? Obviously, Palace lost against Sheffield United. Is there a bit more uncertainty, when you play a side that's just come up?
I think if we haven't played Sheffield United in a good few years, we went up to their place, different ground. Their ground was buzzing. But you study the players, they're all sort of played at the highest level at Villa. So it's a matter of concentrating on our game plan. We're at home, we've got to take the game to them. First and foremost, we've got to fight for our shirt, give our aggression and 100% like we're expected to do on each game we play. So we're optimistic that we're working on good things in training. We're all training well together, so it's a game that we prepare for and we're fully focused for.
How's it to have Gary Cahill now in the back line, the experience, learning, training with him?
Yeah, Gary's brought a lot of experience coming from Chelsea. He's won a lot of honours with them, so it's good to have Gary on board. Brings his experience, he seems calm, under pressure, he's here to help, and he's joined a good squad that are all eager to try and impress our manager. And we have a vibe in our dressing room, that the togetherness that you need to survive in the Premier League, and I think that's been vital in the years since I've come to the club. We've all been together through ups and downs, so I think that's what you need.
It seems like the back line's pretty strong at the moment, obviously Van Aanholt scoring last week as well, now with Cahill coming in. How much competition is there amongst you guys?
Yeah, there's always competition in the Premier League teams. It's healthy, you need that. You need players who are going to stay fit, who are going to come in at the drop of a hat if there's injuries, and who can play at the highest level against these other elite opponents. So it's good that we've got defenders who do have a lot of experience, and we're all working day in, day out with the sessions that the manager puts on defensively, trying our best. And as you said, we look quite strong at the minute defensively, and we're continuing to try and hold that fort down so our offensive players can do their bit.
And yourself, you're 5 years here, 3 good games this season. How do you feel about your progression since you've been at the club?
Yeah, I think it's been a good progression for me, especially at centre back. I'm enjoying it there. It's been a long time since I've come in here playing at full back and then actually getting into my position at centre back. So I'm enjoying that. And as you said, we've got good defenders around me that can only help my game. We've got a great manager, backroom staff who helps structurally how to play. In a shape where you're defensive as well as attacking when you do have the ball. So it's been a nice progression. I've seen some good managers who have worked under, who have the utmost respect for. And as a Palace fan, I'm sure you'd ask at the start of the season what their number one goal would be, is for us to play in the Premier League next season. That's what I've wanted to do since joining Palace, and we've all stuck together and managed to do that.
And on that, obviously finishing 12th last year, you obviously, I'm sure, learned a lot from that season. What do you think is going to make the difference to have a better result, perhaps get into the top 10 this year?
I think you can't get into any bad habits. You've got to do the same as the year before. We've got to progress in stats over the course of the season. We've got to get better, like every team will be wanting to get better. If you ask the bigger teams who we play, what the typical game is to play against Palace, we're hard to break down. We always want to be that way, and the forwards that we have at Palace, we've added well, and we can pose a threat to any team in the Premier League, especially on the counter-attack. And I'm sure with when the team sheet's out on Saturdays, no one likes coming up against the likes of Wilfred Benteke, Townsend, on their day can give any team problems.
Martin Kelly talking to Premier League Productions there in what was a textbook pre-match interview. Up next, we've got a new signing at Crystal Palace, all the way from Sevilla. Well, it's Luke Dunn. He's our new social media executive, but he has been working for Sevilla. And here is me chatting to him and finding out what he's done so far in his career. Yeah, that's right. I've magically moved from the gym up into the training ground canteen lounge area with Luke, our new signing. Luke, why Palace?
Oh, good question. How can you resist? How can you resist Palace? Resist the draw of Selhurst Park? Why would you go live, in Seville? Why would you go out to sunny Spain when you can, make the trek to Croydon every weekend?
Yeah, sunny Beckenham. Look at it out there. Yeah, so let's talk about Seville because it's interesting.
Yeah.
Do we call it Seville or Sevilla? What do we do?
Ooh. I've gotten the habit of calling it Sevilla, but I always get told off for that because I sound like I'm being Ponzi and arrogant, you know.
We love Ponzi and arrogant. Don't worry, that is my two middle names.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about the football team, then you call it Sevilla. If you're talking about the place, then Seville.
Okay, good to know. Right, so how did you end up there? Because you're pretty young still, right?
Yeah, I'm 23. But I was basically there because I was doing a Spanish university course. And as part of that, I had to go out to Spain and work somewhere or study somewhere or do something. And I was lucky enough that was at Sevilla Football Club. So I was out there for the 2017-18 season and then kept working for them while I was doing my last year at uni. And here I am, a fresh-faced graduate at Crystal Palace Football Club.
So what were you doing for them exactly?
I was doing all of their English content, basically. So literally any news story that came out, any press conference, any club statement, any tweet, any Facebook post in English was pretty much under my control, which was kind of big as a responsibility when I was that young, but it was a lot of fun, a lot of work, but a lot of fun.
Obviously, sorry about the noise, by the way. The bush trimmers and the grass cutters have made their way outside. There's Charlie, the groundsman, just with his lawnmower having a chat while the engine's on. Oh, he's turned it off. Right, let's carry on. Yeah, obviously English teams don't have foreign language. Well, we don't anyway. I'm sure the top teams do.
Yeah.
Not that we're not a top team, but you know what I mean. Palace don't have a foreign language thing. Do you write exactly what they write, or do you have your own style with it?
No, not at all. We had our own style with it. You can pretty much get away with anything on foreign language social media accounts anyway. And we tried to, pretty much. Quite successful in some places, and that was the funnest part of the job. And obviously there's some stuff that you have to like literally translate word for word and like take everything, like take all the content they delivered and, you know, reproduce it for English speaking markets. But then we also had a lot of creative freedom to just sort of do what we wanted, and if we can engage people in English then we would. So that was where we could be creative, really. It's like you see foreign language, especially from like German clubs. You see a lot of foreign language accounts that push the boundaries, and we tried to sort of do that, turn it down a bit, but do that a little bit. That was sort of the freedom that we had there.
AS Roma,
yeah,
they're pretty on the edge, aren't they? Were you similar to them?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, everyone lives in the shadow of AS Roma on social media, so that was kind of annoying, to be honest. I mean, because they're really good, and like, well, at least they were really good. I don't think they're very good anymore. I don't know. I feel like whoever was in charge doesn't work there anymore. Everyone would compare you to AS Roma. You ever try and do anything funny? Like, you get like so many comments being like, "Oh, it's not as funny as AS Roma." Like, and it's just like, okay, fine, all right, cheers, thanks for the input. But that's social media, so you can't really do anything. But yeah, we were basically trying to emulate that, I guess. Not that that was intentional. Weirdly, I think when I was first put in charge, I wasn't even aware that they were really funny. I had first seen Borussia Mönchengladbach, and they were quite funny. And I was like, oh, we should do something like that. And then I found out that Roma like made it their thing for like a couple of years. And yeah, like there were times where we would get in conversations with them, and like Twitter threads that we would get involved with them. And Bayer Leverkusen were also really big in that scene, and still are. Like they still tweet like that. There's definitely a scene. It's called, you know, to be honest, 99% of it is like, I'd say 16-15 year olds that like want to have fun interacting with football clubs on Twitter, and you know, they give them that platform. And there is a scene, like they call it football, like football Twitter is like a well-established phrase, but I think that was like where it came from. It was basically clubs taking the piss on Twitter and being a bit more fun, and like you'd get these 15 year olds being like, oh, will you follow me, like follow back, and you got a load of that. And that's the scene. Bit different in the Premier League.
So Spanish football, tell me about it. What did you like about it? What didn't you like about it?
Well, I mean, it's very, very, very technical. Like, all of the players are very technically gifted. And I think that, like, it's something you notice. Like, they all have such, like, really good touches. Some of the composure those players have is incredible. Like, I'm working at Sevilla. Ever Banega is one player who I've never seen someone so composed on the ball. Like, he could be in any situation and look as calm as, like, anything. But then there are bits that, you know, I didn't like either. Like, they are quite theatrical when it comes to, you know, trying to get players sent off or get booked or whatever. And then also, it does miss the culture. I think we were talking about it the other day. It misses the culture of travelling away fans, which I think's a really good part of football. And, you know, not just English football. Like, German away fans are incredible. And, you know, England away fans are good too. But in Spain, it's just not really a culture. You'll go to a game and it can literally be 20, 30 people that turn up from the away end. And it just, you miss it. Like, it's a weird thing. But that being said, some of the sort of stands that you get in Spanish stadiums that are, like, dedicated to the more, let's say, ultra supporters. I mean, they probably wouldn't use that word or want you to use that word, but the ones that will sing the entire game, and, like, literally the entire game. It's a cool thing. That's a cool culture. And it's something that England probably doesn't have as formally. Like, you'll have fans that sing throughout the game, but, you know, when they dedicate a stand to it, it's quite special. But yeah, that's that.
Fantastic. I look forward to you interviewing Camarasa and Guaita throughout the season. I'm sure they do too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to speaking to you.
Thank you. Luke Dunn there, a man who is just at the start of his career. So moving from him to another man who is a little bit further from the start of his career, it's Roy Hodgson answering the same odd questions.
James Tompkins is just on the brink of recovery, but he still isn't training with the team fully as we would like. Scott Dan, unfortunately, his hand trampled on in the game on Tuesday, so he's got a cast over that, and we'll decide in the morning whether or not he's going to be fit enough to play as well. But apart from that, we're okay.
Well, it seems it's just by a complete stroke of luck that it seems to always be the defensive player that seems to be struggling with injuries at this moment in time. Are you concerned at all about maybe just the lack of defensive cover that you have in the squad at the moment?
Well, it's getting better. I mean, we do have a lack of defensive cover, in particular in the full-back positions, because we weren't able to replace Aaron Wan-Bissaka and Pap Suarez, who was really acting as an alternative and a competitor for Patrick Van Aanholt. He left the club as well. So, of course, with those two not having been replaced, it does leave us light in those areas. But we are strong in the centre-back area, and we've obviously been waiting on the recovery of Tompkins and Sacco, but I'm fully expecting them to be fully recovered by the end of this international break. So we're moving in the right direction in that area. But it's been a slight concern, and you're right to mention it.
And take you back to last week, an incredible performance away from home at Old Trafford. What was it like in terms of just to get off on the mark, your first win in the end of the season? What was the confidence like in terms of with the boys?
Well, it's so important, isn't it? You know, for every team, wins in this league are hard to come by, unless you happen to be Man City and Liverpool. For the rest of us, they're hard to come by, and when they come, you embrace them because they're so important for you in terms of getting your points total up to where you need it to be. And to do that after giving him what I thought was a disappointing performance, and what the team thought was a disappointing performance the week before against Sheffield United, to go to Man United and rectify that was a fantastic achievement, I think, from the team, and a great feeling. But of course now the next game comes around. That's why I'm sitting here with you today. And we've got to now find a way of reproducing that type of performance that we gave against Manchester United, because we know that Aston Villa will be a tough nut to crack, and the points are every bit as important against them as they were last week.
And speaking of Villa, obviously Dean Smith come up into the Premier League. Villa seemed like a rejuvenated team, a lot of changes they made, a lot of transfers. What have you kind of noticed about them kind of going into this weekend?
Well, I noticed that, you know, Dean, when he was first appointed, obviously took on a group of players that he'd inherited and had been there for a period of time. But as his reign continued towards the latter part of last season, I saw that already his thoughts on the way he wants the team to play, and in particular the type of players that he wants at the club, that started to change already. And we see now, of course, that three or four, or maybe... You okay there over there with that?
Sorry.
I'm afraid I'm at that age where I can do one thing at a time. I can't multitask. I can't read and watch television at the same time. I either watch TV or read. Sorry.
No, of course. Take your time.
We saw already the sort of changes he was bringing about. And a lot of the players that he brought in, he's now signed. You know, the Houses and the Tyrone Mings and these guys were there with him, but now they're signed for the club. The club has invested heavily and well, I think, in order certainly to back his judgment and the way he wants the team to play. So the fact that they've had a good start to the season and are looking like a very dangerous opponent doesn't surprise me one bit, A, because I know Dean and the work he does, and B, I think the club has gone about its business in a very intelligent way.
As a modern manager, you just have to utilise your whole squad. You maintain changes in the week. What kind of was your thought process behind that? Was that kind of to assess the squad as a whole?
No, it's largely brought about because of the problems we have. As I say, you know, Ward and Schlupp were injured, so they didn't have any chance of playing. Mm-hmm. Sacco and Tompkins weren't available. And then, of course, when it came to people like Patrick Van Aanholt, if he'd have got injured in the game, we'd have had no other option at left back. Mm-hmm. And, of course, with people like Benteke and Wickham available, it was obvious for me to give them a game in that match rather than to keep pushing Jordan Ayew, who'd worked so very, very hard in the week before, as had the three midfield players. Mm-hmm. So basically, I selected from the squad of players a team which I thought was capable of winning the game, but we weren't capable of winning the game, and as a result, we lost. We lost.
Were you kind of disappointed in the fact that obviously you gave Benteke and Connor Wickham, not to highlight them, but an opportunity to kind of showcase their talent and maybe give you some thought process, but they weren't able to grab it?
It's never easy, those games, when you give players chances in those games, because the opponents are always a lot better than they're given credit for, and they work very hard, and for them, of course, it's a very important occasion because there's a scalp on offer. But I think that a lot of the players who played in that game will look at their performances and think, I didn't do as well as I know I can. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we didn't do as well as a team. But to be fair to them, you know, the playing with a centre-back, a young centre-back making his debut at right-back, and a central midfield player playing at left-back, we were very unbalanced. But I had no option, I'm afraid, other than to do that.
Naturally. And just speaking on Wilf, I know that he's been returning into, he started last week against Man United, but he's been returning to full fitness after missing a large part of the pre-season because of African Nations. Is he getting back up to full speed now? Is he kind of getting close to that form?
I don't honestly think he's ever been anything other than full fitness. Wilf Zaha is one of these players that could go 5 weeks and never take part in a training session and come out and still give a very good performance in the games. He's a natural athlete. So I've never actually made suggestions that he's lacking fitness or even lacking form. Mm-hmm. It's just that against Sheffield United, like many other players in the team that day, his performance didn't live up to the standards which he set himself and which we expect, but he certainly wasn't alone. Mm-hmm. And against Manchester United, I thought his performance levels reached the levels that we expect of him and need from him as well, because he's a very important player for us.
Last one for me, Roy. I just want to get your opinion. VAR seems to be causing so much split controversy between managers. Some managers are turning around and saying it's taking the authenticity out of the game. Some managers are saying that referees need more help and it should be used more. Mm. Kind of yourself as the most experienced manager in the league, how do you kind of see it?
Well, pretty much in between those two things, like everybody else. But I don't honestly think there's such a lot of point in wasting a lot of time and spending a lot of words on something which is there for us to accept and deal with. Mm-hmm. I think we all accept, at least the managers I've spoken to, that it's brought in for the right reasons. We all want fairness, you know, we want goals that aren't really goals to be chalked off. And a goal that's chalked off that really is a goal, we want that given. So there's no problem in that respect. But there'll be teething problems, I suppose, and there'll be further discussions to be had, I guess, as to how far down the line we go with things, because nobody wants the referee on the field of play to be constantly overruled by a referee sitting in a booth somewhere watching it on the television. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, I just accept it as a fact of our lives. A lot has changed in football since I started as a coach, and this is just another change that I'm coming to terms with and accepting. And whether I actually like it or not has no real relevance, if we're to be brutally honest, because we have it, and the best thing to do, if you can't change anything, is to get on with it and try and accept it as best you can.
Thank you so much, Roy.
My pleasure.
Emma. Afternoon, Roy. I hope you understand VAR more than we do. I'm still trying to learn it. You mentioned Aaron Wan-Bissaka. He's recently been called up to a senior England side for the first time. And a lot of Palace fans I know are saying, oh, as soon as he moves to Manchester United, then he gets the call up to the senior side. When he was at Crystal Palace, it wasn't fashionable enough, the club, for him to get an England call up. What are your thoughts on that? I guess, one, as the Palace manager, two, as a former England manager, who would have...
Well, I've just seen an interesting statistic that since the 9th of February, was it the 9th of February or the 9th of February, if you take the games we've played in the Premier League since then, I think it's something like 17 games, was it?
Yeah.
We're actually third in the league on the number of points we've scored, with 10 wins. So I don't think we can start using that argument that, well, no one bothered to watch us or no one bothered to think about us. I think that's could be easily shot down in flames by the statistics I've just presented to you. You know how much I love statistics and how valuable they are. But I think that's unfair on Gareth Southgate and Steve Holland, who watch a lot of our games. I know from my conversations with them that they were very much aware of Aaron last year and very much considering him and monitoring his progress. I think it's just the fact that, you know, they do have a lot of right backs at their disposition. Trippier, of course, was the one in the World Cup alongside Walker, and then Trent Alexander-Arnold has burst onto the scene and done exceptionally well. So I just think it's, you know, they've been waiting for the moment that they think is right to bring Aaron in, and I certainly would like to believe that he would still have been given this sort of recognition even if he'd been playing for us. So I don't accept that argument. I am extremely pleased for him, and I do think he really deserves it. And we certainly, during the time we worked with him, myself and my coaching staff, we always thought that he could get an England call-up one day. That's how good he is. And it's come this early on in his career, which is even more satisfying.
What's the mood like going into this game? Because you come from the high of beating Manchester United and then the disappointment of losing in the League Cup. But is it about taking the momentum from Old Trafford into this game?
Well, it's two teams, isn't it? The fact is, if you just look at the result, 0-0 and they're losing on penalties, Crystal Palace have lost another game. But the Crystal Palace that play against Manchester United only had one player in the team that played Colchester. So it's a very, very different game. So I don't know that those other 10 players who didn't really feature to any extent against Colchester are going to be much damaged by the fact that their squad member mates and teammates didn't manage to pull off a victory that we wanted. I think they'll still be thinking, if we're good enough, us 10 plus the one who played to beat Man United, we could be good enough to go out and beat Aston Villa.
I know it's very early in the season, but when does it become a concern that you haven't scored at home, that you haven't won at home? Because that was a concern for a large part of last season.
I think it'll become a major concern when I look at that table and we've played 17 games and we're not sitting third anymore, but we're sitting third from bottom. I think I'll worry about it then.
Christian Benteke was the last Aston Villa player to score a winning goal at Selhurst Park.
Right.
Do you think that he's done enough as a Crystal Palace player in terms of scoring goals for you?
Well, I can't say that he's done enough in terms of scoring goals as a Crystal Palace player, because it's pretty obvious that if you look at the number of games he's played, the number of goals he's scored, that record is not a good record. So I can't defend him on that front if it's only about goals. But I can defend him on the way he works for the team, the work he's putting in, his determination to get back on the goal trail and to do everything he can to help the team win, because quite a lot of the matches that he's played in that he hasn't scored in, we've won the game or taken points from the game. So I refuse to be that one-eyed, score good, don't score bad. It's more complicated than that as far as I'm concerned. But if you ask me, would I have liked him to have scored more goals from his games played, then the answer is a resounding yes. But if you ask him, the answer will be even more of a resounding yes, because, you know, that's something which he would desperately like to do. But there's competition for places, and up at Old Trafford, I decided not to play him and to play Jordan Ayew instead, and that's part and parcel also, unfortunately, being a Premier League striker's life, that if you don't score a goal in a number of games, someone might be waiting to take your place.
And finally for me, you say you don't like statistics, but a nice one might be that you as a manager, have won the most matches against Aston Villa. You've beaten them 7 times as a manager. Would you hope that is 8?
Of course. But, you know, without your help and Joe's help in seeing this, I would have had no idea how many games I would have had as a manager against Aston Villa. And I can certainly cast my mind back and think of some. A very important one, my second game for Blackburn Rovers, was a 4-0 victory at Villa Park, which was a very important game. You just come from Italy and you aren't as well known in England then as perhaps I am now, and you start off with a home win against Derby and then you beat Villa 4-0. It's a pretty easy game to remember and reflect kindly upon. But otherwise, I'd have had no idea. If you'd have said to me how many games you think you'd played against Aston Villa, I'd have had no idea. And if you'd have asked me how many wins, I might have been able to think of a couple, but I would have had no idea. Those are statistics which I think are newspaper fillers, because they make no difference at all to our lives. You know, the fact that you won a game last year doesn't give you any help or any reason why you think you're going to win one this year. And that's the beauty of football, you know. When a game is finished, it's consigned to history and you look forward to the next game, which is when your presence starts. And for us, we are fully aware how good Aston Villa are and what problems they can cause. We've done our very best to prepare our players for what we think they're going to face tomorrow. And now it's going to be up to them to go out and reproduce, if you like, some of the form they showed in the home game against Everton and the away game against Man United.
Thank you. We'll go to Matt from PLP.
Hi, Roy. You've talked a lot about wanting to score more goals on the whole with your team.
I answer questions about it. I think there's a slight difference between... I don't actually come in here and start every press conference by talking about goals scored, but I do answer questions.
Answer just one more, that would be great.
I'm happy to.
What's the bigger problem at the moment? Is it creating the chances or sticking them away?
Probably both. Against Everton, there weren't many chances in the game for either side, because I think both teams are quite well organised defensively and don't give too many chances away. And again, going away to Sheffield and away to Manchester United, they aren't places where we're playing very open teams that allow you lots of time and space on the ball. So your chances you're going to create are not going to be that numerous. And of course, then you're rather hoping that you take them, as we did against Manchester United. But all you can do anyway is to continue working on your attacking play and your attempts to score goals alongside those two lines. The movements and the passing and the combinations that you hope you're going to be able to produce in order to create chances. And then when that chance is there, that's when, of course, you are absolutely... dependent upon the player to whom the chance falls taking it and scoring a goal. But I'd like to think there's enough players in our team who can score a goal, and that we will get enough goals during the course of the season to give us the points total we need to stay in the league, which certainly is, as always, our major factor.
And going back to Villa, how do you assess their strengths on the field?
Well, we've gone through with our players what we think they are strong at, but I don't think it's right for me in a press conference with the television cameras on me to start discussing Aston Villa and what they are good at and what maybe they're not quite so good at, because I don't manage Aston Villa. I think that's a question for Dean Smith. If you ask me about my team, I'm more than happy to answer, but I'm always very reticent to answer questions about other teams and what they're good or not good at. But I have said, and I'm quite happy to repeat, I think they're a good side. I think they've got a lot of good players. I think they play good football, and I think they're going to be a thorn in many a team's side this season. And I'm just hoping that we can play well enough tomorrow so they won't be a thorn in ours.
Are you pretty happy with things defensively at the moment? I think you've only conceded 2 goals, is that right, in the 3 games?
Yeah. Well, you've got to be happy with that. You know, it's not easy to keep teams out in the Premiership. And, you know, Everton have got plenty of very interesting attacking players. Sheffield United have come up with an awful lot of confidence and, you know, play as well with a lot of attacking players. Then you're playing at Manchester United, Old Trafford. I think if you'd have said to me before the start of the season, you'll concede 2 goals in those 3 games, I might have said that's okay.
Just one more from me. I was reading that since the start of last year, you've got 60% of your points away from home. Hmm. Would you rather that stat was reversed, or you're not bothered really at all about how you get your points?
I'd rather it was the same number of points that we seem to have taken away from and the same number we'd have got at home, of course. And, of course, you could always argue that if you're going to win matches, it's nicer to win them in front of 25,000 Palace fans instead of 3,000 or 4,000 Palace fans. But they're obvious statements to make. At the moment, I think I'll remain satisfied that the points are coming in and we are still getting them. And the anomaly that it sometimes seems that we get more away from home than at home, I'll just live with that anomaly, because I certainly can't explain why that is. It's not that there are enormous changes in our approach to games, home or away. In fact, far from it. The way we try to play is pretty rehearsed and kept to in a disciplined way, whether we play at home or away. But it's turned out statistically that's what it is. So, winning lots of games at home and losing away, I will have to keep answering the questions.